All right, hey everybody. yeah, I've just been blown away by the teaching this morning. I've been listening since Anne began teaching, and it's just it's good stuff. Good stuff. And then after Regina played her song, well, sometime after, I was thinking about it because I'm thinking, like, did Neil Diamond do that song? Anyway.
I don't know.
I thought, oh gosh, it's been so long since I've done this. I'm like, oh yeah, a song. I normally start playing with the song. So I'm like listening with Regina with one ear, and I'm going, tell me a song to play. What song to play? And Alison Krauss came in, and I'm like, Alison Krauss? No, I'm not going to play Alison Krauss. You know, it's so funny because I asked for help, and then I go, no, not that. And so I said, okay, here's what I'll do. I'll just go to my music file on my computer and I'll click without looking. And of course, you can imagine who came up, Alison Krauss. So so let me play the song that came up. One sec. And there's the lyrics. Because then I looked them up and went, are you sure that's all? But anyway, here's the song. So that brought tears to my eyes. I have no idea why, because I'm, you know, I'm reading those lyrics. I'm like, what? How is this relevant? And I suppose there's something to be said for, you know, the two highways and the two voices, me and my ego, the two voices that I saw in there as well. Some of this, you know, what I hear this guy saying all the time is beware, beware. This morning I thought, ooh, maybe more effective would be, you remember that robot from Lost in Space? Danger, Will Robinson, danger. I'd like to have one of those, you know, that would float up here with helium in it. Because that's what that voice is always saying. Danger, danger. And let me keep you from the danger. But first, I'm going to define it. I'm going to create the danger. And then I'm going to tell you how to avoid it, is how that works. So I guess that can be seen in that song as well. So I don't know why the song got played. It got played, even though I tried to avoid it. And I have some writing here, and I want to share with you all something I posted on our new forum. So some of you may have seen it. I want to share that, but I really feel to let me slow down. The posting I made on the forum was about my experience at the Enlightenment Intensive, and it was a transformative experience. But before I get to that, I think I want to start with my journey today. So let me just do that. So I started with this quote from Inner Ramana. It is important to remember that belief in the mind writes the script of the world. Therefore, surrendered action without belief does not write a script. In this way, it ultimately frees one from the illusion of a world. And I said, this is the quote that stood out for me in today's reading. I seem to think I know what this means. But if that were true, it would not make sense to ask inner wisdom to comment on it. I appreciate that it seems to resonate, but I would like further assistance with this contemplation. Understanding that, lots of emotion here. I don't know where that's from either. Understanding that you do not know is a good thing. Remember that words are symbols of symbols. What you know can never be perfectly aligned with words, as you find when you attempt to describe a revelation and it feels as if it falls flat. The truth is that the currency of consciousness is a felt sense of what is. That is why when meditating, we look at this felt sense of being, what we call awareness. You have called this gratitude because gratitude seems like a safe place to go without thought or definition. Recognition of gratitude is thus like a bridge thought. What you are extends so far beyond that which you know is gratitude. Resting in this place without definition, or rather without believing the definition that arises, is abiding in awareness. And I said, I see what has been referred to as emptying the shell as letting go of the attempt to or need for definition or understanding. I see that when I do that, it is easier to hear your guidance, inner wisdom. Is that correct? The answer, yes. The key is to relax into not knowingness. The key is trust, the willingness to not know. And I said, I can see that this willingness encompasses the willingness to be wrong about what I think I know. And he answered, yes, to need to know, as well as the need to be seen as if you know, you know, wanting others to see me as if I know. To need to know, as well as the need to be seen as if you know, is the will of the personal I to exist. Can you see how that will builds the structure of thinking mind and the I thought? You can also see how the fear of not knowing or being wrong provides reinforcement to that structure. And again, it's not the not knowing or the willingness to be wrong. It's the fear of those things. That fear provides reinforcement to the structure. In fact, this fear of not knowing is the same fear often referred to as the fear of non-existence. It is this fear that must be faced and traversed. Interesting, the word traverse is like walk across it, as opposed to like transcended. So I don't know where that word came from, but there it is. It is this fear that must be faced and traversed. Letting go this fear is letting go of the I thought. Letting go this fear is the death of the ego. Letting go this fear in faith and in trust is what I would have you do. As I journaled this morning, it felt like I was doing it right. Oh gosh, I'm doing it right now. And I saw those thoughts as well. But it just felt different than it has felt in the past. Sometimes in the past, it really felt, let me see if I can get this in order to describe it. It says the truth is that the currency of consciousness is a felt sense of what is. That is why when meditating, we look at this felt sense of being, what we call awareness. And I realized when I read it a moment ago, I'm like, that sounds kind of backwards. But it's not. Again, it's that difficulty of translating what's heard into words. It might have been better to say that is why when meditating, we look with this feeling sense. You know, it's like it's not going to come in words. And it's not going to come in definitions and understanding. What's not going to come? Awareness of awareness, I guess. It's just a real felt sense of beingness, you know, without pointing at it and going, oh, look, there's awareness, or oh, look, there's what I'm supposed to be doing, or you know, oh boy, is this meditating, or again, this last sentence says, gosh, it's so interesting because I think my earlier writing that I was referring to probably refers to this. You know, when we were there at the Enlightenment Intensive, and you know, you kind of work through all that, all the thoughts. You know, ego's telling me, ego is telling me this, telling me that, and telling me this. You know, and when you get underneath that, and then you can settle into what's really going on. You can settle into the truth of your being, and you do that by focusing on your heart, by focusing on your body, by focusing on what's absolutely really going on in my experience. What is going on in my experience now that seems the truest thing about me in this moment? And so that's really looking with a feeling sense. You know, what am I really feeling? Not what does this mean about me? What does this say about me? You know, what will I feel next? You know, none of that. It's just this looking at what's my experience without the need to put that in words and define it. How does my experience feel in this moment? And when I would do that at the Enlightenment Intensive, what came up was a feeling of gratitude. And I think that I said that. And I think that was my experience the last time I went to one of these Enlightenment Intensives. was that under everything was this, you know, my father had just died at that time. That was a year ago. So I realized that under the sadness was this feeling of gratitude. And I realized that as I looked at everything, what was underneath was this sense of gratitude. And I had that same experience this time. And you know, what's really cool about the Enlightenment intensives is it's like deep meditation for several days. So as I really rested in this deep meditation, what I seemed to find underneath everything, you know, I'd explore a feeling or, you know, what's really going on with me now, was this feeling of gratitude. Well, and that's what I called it, was gratitude. What are you feeling? I'm feeling gratitude. Well, and so Inner Wisdom tells me this morning, you have called this gratitude because gratitude seems like a safe place to go. Without thought or definition. So when you know, you throw all that other stuff off, what's left? Okay, gratitude. Yeah, I recognize that. Here I am. I'm sitting in gratitude. Woo, that was close. But as Inner Wisdom says, you know, that's fine. But recognize that that's a bridge thought because what you are is undefinable. That's a nice resting place, but what you are is undefinable. And indeed, it says resting in this place without definition, or rather without believing the definition that arises, is abiding in awareness. So, so I'll be looking at that. I'll be being with that, right? Not trying to define it, not trying to pigeonhole it. Just, you know, as was the practice in that intensive, just opening to that. What this talks about defining it is, in some way, that same thing, you know, it's like ego wanting to run the meditation. It's that need to make it manageable, to get it into bite-sized pieces so I can comfortably ingest it, right? So I can comfortably endure it rather than letting it all bust loose. All right. sorry. So let me read from let me read to you. I wrote down soon after we got back. I think we left the Enlightenment intensive. It was a 5-day intensive, and because of the weather and whatnot, I ended up being in the place for a week. We got done on January the 3rd. Ann and I went out to New Mexico to do this thing, and anyway, we got back on January the 3rd, and this was written the following day to try and kind of. Keep this in memory, in case that were to fade for me, my experience were to fade for me. Gosh, I got papers out of place. Okay, I'll figure out where they go. I'll figure it out. What I want to say is that I printed it out from the beginning. I think these papers must be upside down. I'm sorry. I'm a little scattered. The point is, the week before when I sat down to try and write with inner wisdom, it was mostly me screaming, why won't you help me? I've been trying to do this for so long. I'm working so hard. I'm getting no help here. And I had heard very clearly that what there was for me to look at. And same thing you guys have heard, right? Because it's what Inner Ramana's encouraging us to do, which is to look at the chattering mind, realize it's not us, right? And go back into stillness. Go back into stillness. But at any rate, and I'm like, so my complaint was, I get what you're saying. Intellectually, I can hear what is being said here. But I don't know how to separate myself from the thinking mind. I don't know how that's done. And I can't figure out how that's done. And I need your help. And I felt like I was getting no help. None. Although it's really ridiculous, right? I'm getting Inner Ramana. I'm getting Regina giving me the tips. I'm getting Regina teaching in Inner Ramana. I think I'm getting help. That's okay. I sure couldn't hear it at the time. And then this opportunity to go to this enlightenment intensive came up, and it was clear that, while there was resistance in me, that I was to go. So I did go. And this was the perfect opportunity to really see these things. And as it turned out, our hosts for that, Jack and Katrine Potticary, don't do a lot of teaching. They mostly teach the technique about how to do a dyad, how to look at what's coming up and how to share that with the partner that's listening, and how to receive that when your partner's sharing that sort of thing with you. So mostly they're teaching structure. But they do a little bit of, just like the rest of us, just like I'm sitting here doing now. This is what was important for me. This is what came up for me. You know, this is my experience. So they do some of that sort of thing. And as it happened, they were talking about and maybe just a snippet of it. For me, this is what the entire week ended up being, what I was exploring. But they were talking about this judge guy, same thing as the ego, same thing as super ego, the one that goes, oh, don't do that, oh, don't do that, if you do that, you know, this will happen, just the chattering mind. Some of what they said resonated with me and led to I don't know. So now I'm gonna read. So having gotten back from the intensive, this is what I wrote. And it's funny because it starts all lighthearted. Everything else was like, why are you doing this to me? Why have you forsaken me, right? And this starts out, good morning. Good morning. I wish to share what I learned this past week at the Enlightenment Intensive. And so I think that I'll probably just read through this if I can find the pages, because they're all out of order now. I may have to go on the computer. But I think I'll just read through it, but I can't swear to that. All right, anyway. Here's what I learned. I learned what is meant by awareness watching awareness. I learned that the inner critic, judge, congratulator is a single voice, that none of its dictates, admonitions, harassing reminders, comparisons, accolades, in other words, none of what it says can be or need be trusted. Indeed, I learned that I cannot parse through what is being said and determine what should be listened to and what should be ignored. None of it has value. I learned that this voice is not me and indeed is not even related to me. And I guess, call it whatever you want. I guess you could say that Grace came in and showed me this voice wasn't me because, you know, as my whining the week before indicates, I couldn't make that, you know, I couldn't make that separation the week before. But when I could see that this voice wasn't me, for me, that was key to seeing that I didn't need to as this says, parse through what was being said. I didn't need to go, you know, how much of what I'm telling myself, which is the terms I would have used a couple weeks ago, how much of what I'm telling myself is true, and how much of what I'm telling myself is just, you know, not helpful, and the I am bad thought and all that stuff. And again, the import of this first part of this is none of it's true. Not the first word, not the thing that says you're doing a lousy job, or boy, are you doing good. Neither of those voices. Well, it's the same voice, but neither of those thoughts are true thoughts. Neither of those thoughts are helpful. In fact, neither of those thoughts, or any of the millions of the rest like them, are actually helpful in any way. So I don't have to, you know, thumb through them and figure out, you know, what do I need to listen to here? I don't need to listen to anything. I need to turn from the thoughts and rest. And Ann said it well this morning. I'm not, you know, my job is to stay here in the center. Center. That's where my balloon came from at some point. I was thinking about this and I thought, you know, as I got back from the intensive, it seemed harder and harder to separate all the thoughts that come in during the course of a day. Separate that from me. So the balloon's a reminder, right? That all that stuff, you know, all the should do, wish I'd done, ought to do. This is how Ann does it. This is how Regina does it. This is what Regina wants me to do. This is what my mom would say. Da, 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 da. All that. It's not me. All that is not me. Okay. And therefore, I don't have to listen to it. Therefore, I don't have to argue with it. I don't have to justify it. I don't have to, you know, when whatever argument comes in, I don't have to go, no, oh, that's not true, you know. Last night I was using the example of, you know, he's an asshole about money. That's what this voice would tell me, whoever he is, right? And this, you know, he's always like that. That's what this guy would tell me. And if I think this guy is me, then I have to go, then it seems like I have to take both sides of the argument. Then I could go, well, you know, what about the other times when he was really nice about that? You know, da, 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 da. But I'm engaging this. If it's in my head, I am totally wrapped up in this and engaged in this. Whereas if I remember that those thoughts are not my thoughts, that those thoughts are separate from me, I can go, uh-huh, thank you for your counsel or your whatever. But there's nothing more to be done with them than to recognize that these thoughts don't tell me anything I need to know, that these thoughts are not helpful to me in any way, that thoughts, good, bad, you know, the ones that say, oh my gosh, something needs to be done about that, any of these thoughts, they're just not helpful. You know, and Regina's been talking about this, of course, and you know, no, you don't need thoughts to navigate the world. Yeah, Dove says it doesn't mean anything except the meaning I give to it. Yeah. None of it. None of it. And in fact, I'm not even given the meaning. I mean, this is all, this guy is giving the meaning. And how does that get created? Well, you know, this whole philosophical discussion, it's the one consciousness, and it's the thoughts rethought and refed, and it's what my folks did when I was little, and it all gets rolled up into this ball. Okay, great. You know, however you want to explain that, that's great. However this got created is great or irrelevant, or, you know, it's irrelevant. The question is what I do with these things when they come in. And they come in, they are not who I am. They only get reheated as I believe them, as I believe this is me. Then it becomes something that I got to peel off. I got to try and somehow separate from. If I'm unaware that this isn't me anyway. If I think it's something I got to like peel off. It's not me. I can just say, okay, whatever. You have your opinion. All right, let me go on. I learned that I cannot parse through what is being said and determine what should be listened to and what should be ignored. None of it has value. I learned that this voice is not me and indeed is not even related to me. I learned that we all have this voice inside us. I learned that it is louder for some than others, and that it is louder sometimes than others. I learned that my view of others is guided by this voice, and that the end result is a view of others that accords no one any respect. This voice would compare me with others and tell me that they are no more worthy of respect than I am. And that's how this voice seems to work. It's comparing you to some standard that you came up with somewhere. Maybe it was your mother's standard. Maybe it was your school standard. Maybe it was your country's standard. It's comparing you to that standard or the standard set by other people. You know, well, that's not how Anne would do it. That's not what Anne would say. Anne would be much more articulate when she explained this than I did, right? Or that's not how we did it last time. Or boy, we do that in the future. I mean, there's always some kind of comparison going on, some kind of standard never met. And if you meet that standard, it'll change. Well, you did it good this time, but you better work really hard because you know you're going to screw it up next time you do it. I mean, you can't win. There is no winning with that voice. And so I saw at least what I had done was I'll just fix this whole thing, right? I suck and so does everybody else. I mean, if nobody is able to meet standards, then I can't really be held responsible for not meeting them myself. That's what I found by that voice. So I was looking at this idea of respect. Again, this voice would compare me with others and tell me, this was my winning strategy, and tell me that they are no more worthy of respect than I am. I even went and looked up the word respect. To respect someone is to admire or appreciate them for their skills, abilities, or accomplishments. When I looked, I found, and this is a shocker, was to me, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to say that out loud at some point. When I looked, I found I could not identify a single person as someone I respected. It's not the first person. And as I say here, that discovery showed that there was something else at work within me on a conscious recognition. I mean, the absurdity of that. Not one single person, not anyone in the world that I respected. I mean, oh, come on. What's underneath this, right? So that just showed me that I needed to look a little bit further. I'm having this internal argument. Well, you know, what about the Byron Katie, Eckhart Tolle? Oh no, that was a spontaneous one. They didn't do anything to deserve that. So I don't have to respect them either. I mean, it, really absurd. absolutely absurd. So that was the first clue that this that there was something to be said in here about this whole respect thing, and how I was using it to manipulate my experience, to manipulate how I felt about myself. I said, this pointed to the recognition that failing to accord others respect was a means of bolstering my own self-image. If no one is right, I can't be wrong. I learned that when Jesus said, forgive them for they know not what they do, he meant they're simply listening to that inner voice and therefore they cannot hear their hearts. My experience is that I wanted to be hard on people for not getting it. You know, you're not getting it. You've been doing this long enough. You ought to get this and you ought to be able to, come on, buck up. You know the next step. Do it. Yeah, right. Shauna's smacking herself, right? Or I'm going to reach up there and smack you, right? Come on, you can do this. But again, what I really got was everybody's got this voice screaming. And for some people, it's screaming louder than for other people. Or again, it's screaming louder at some times than at other times. When Jesus said, forgive them for they know not what they do, he meant they are simply listening to that inner voice and therefore they cannot hear their hearts. And I will tell you that sitting there in some of those dyads, when I had some of that stuff going on, I couldn't hear, you know, we sit about this from each other, right? And I couldn't even hear the other person, you know, you speak for a while and then, you know, you speak for 5 minutes or so and then they speak for 5 minutes or so while all you do is listen. I couldn't even hear them. It's like, you know, could somebody turn it down so I can get this guy sitting across from me? And I think, you know, to varying degrees, that's how most of us go through life, trying to hear over that voice. I'm sorry, be quiet so I can hear what she's saying, right? You know, and so it's a call for Jesus Christ. It's a call for compassion. Have some compassion. You know, you think you're the only one with a voice that can't be heard over? Have some compassion here. Okay, this says, I would not hold anyone responsible for being unable to hear over the deafening cries of that inner voice. I would not add to their already tortured sense of self by adding my own guilt and negative assessments to their mix. I would rather extend the knowledge of the truth to them through the awareness of my own truth of being, which, of course, could be no different from their own. So, you know, that's what's called for. Thanks, Dove. it's that extension of beingness. You know, they already got one of these around their neck, right? They don't need me to add mine. And so again, what we're guided to do in this enlightenment intensive diet format is to, you know, see what's coming up and be with what's coming up. And then look in again, right? To see whatever's the most real thing that you can say in the moment. Right? What's the most real thing about your experience in this moment? And hey, this is what life, the same method is what's required by life. You know, it's not just when I'm sitting in a dyad in New Mexico. It's like, you know, deal with what's coming up, be with what's coming up, right? Recognize it's a story. You go back to, you know, you go back to center, go back to your heart, rest. Um, So let me just, I don't know. I lost. Oh, yeah, this is all backwards. Okay. So let me finish reading some of this. So I said, I also learned that the awareness of self is known by opening to all of experience. Stated in the reverse, I see that listening to the voice, this guy, listening to the voice closes down or puts a cap on this expanded awareness. I can also see, I also see that my body can tell me whether I'm opening or closing. Am I aware of a seemingly solid block from my neck to my rib cage and constricted throat? Or am I able to breathe from the top of my head to and through my pelvis? Yeah, again, that's what we're encouraged to do. What am I really feeling? Am I, you know, the Course in Miracles talks about the body being a communication device. Well, it is that, and it may mean communication with others, but buddy, I'll tell you what, it means communication right here. What is my experience? What am I experiencing? Do I feel like a big chunk of concrete? Well, let's look at that, right? Let's be with that. What stories am I believing that make me feel like a chunk of concrete? What stories am I believing that, you know, keep me from being able to breathe? I say, if I experience the block rather than the flow, it is only because I have attempted to clamp down on my experience. I do this because I am listening, perhaps in some slight but subtle way, to the voice that says ultimately, close. Right? I mean, this voice is designed to protect me. It's designed to tell me my weaknesses, tell me what I need to be on the lookout for, tell me how to do it better next time, tell me how to show up better. That's what this voice says it's for. but you see how even as I say that, I can just feel it clamping down, right? Oh, we gotta protect you at this level. And, you know, because there's this big, awful thing, then, you know, you need to be more careful at this level and you need to think more about this. And you need to, and it's just, you just feel the constriction in that. And the attempting to marshal my experience, to lasso it in and bring it down and, you know, make it something solid that I can control. Because that's how the thinking mind, the judge would, look at experience and attempt to resolve it. It creates the problem, and then it tells you, here, I got a solution for you. But it gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And the truth is, well, what I've written here, when I notice I have or am attempting to close, I need merely remember my true desire to directly experience truth and open to my experience. So, okay, it's scary. Let's sit with that. What does the experience of scary feel like? I don't know. I'm not going there. No, I am going there. Because you know why? Because my true desire is to experience the truth. So I don't need this guy standing in front of me, you know, warding stuff off. Let me just be in that truth. If experience is scary, okay. What's my desire? To experience the truth. If scariness is all that's true, then by God, let's do it. So I'm open to that. Noted here, I can do this by listening through my heart. And I asked for some help on that, and I heard listen through my heart. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Listen through my heart. But it's... you know, I could interpret it a number of ways. I think it's probably just a matter of attention, but listening through my heart really is, we'll try it. That's all I can say, try it. And I know you've all done it, but really consciously go, okay, let me take this in through my heart, not through my head, not through the filter, not the, through the thing that goes, all right, this said this and you got to defend. Okay. It's listening without the filter. It's just being willing to be open to it, to not need that filter to make sure I don't get hurt. I said, here, I listen through my heart by allowing whatever I find there. It feels not so much like embracing. And that's the thing. It seems like some of the practices tell us to embrace. But, you know, again, embracing is like that trying to draw it all in. And when you draw it all in, guess what comes with it? So it feels not so much like embracing, but extending the flow I find in my heart to the object of my contemplation. So it's not a gathering in. I mean, that's an opening. It's allowing that flow out. Again, it feels not so much like embracing, but extending the flow I find in my heart to the object of my contemplation. The object of my contemplation seems always to be that awareness of what I find in my heart, even if what I find there is scary. These pages are all out of place. So let me just read you this one that seems to be in front of my face. This is regarding a quote from Inner Ramana. Stepping away from the mind is as simple as losing interest in it. When the mind chatters, it chatters because you are listening. As you lose interest in what it has to say, because you know its answers are not your answers, the chattering of the mind shall fade away. I said, when the mind chatters, it chatters because you're listening. Again, repeating the quote. What would you say to me about this? And the response, we are coming to see the mind's messages for what they are. This is indeed the path to awakening. I would guide you in all those places where you used to look to the mind for guidance. It does not protect you nor guide you truly. Remember to use the mantra as a means of quickly bringing rest from the mind. Listen to and with the heart. You do this when you check in with me before speaking. That is a good practice. You might also begin to check with me before doing the things that just feel like they're taking place without thought. Mind moves you without your knowledge. And if you find you're being moved to do anything, checking in with me as to what you are to do or whether you are to do what it has occurred to you to do can inform you as to whether you are listening to me or unconsciously following the mind's dictates and thereby strengthening its hold on or influence over you. All right, I'll just go on and read this. Perception can only be experienced through the mind is the next quote I wanted to look at. The response is... This is because all is one. It is not entirely accurate. This is because all is one. It is not entirely accurate, but it can be helpful to see everything as energy, all with the same source and all moving in the same direction. To make distinctions in your world can be helpful, but this distinguishing function can be employed in the service of the illusion by the judge or in the service of the truth as in discernment. True discernment is utter reliance upon me for all that is beyond your knowledge. Your knowledge in the world is not knowledge, but ignorance. Your knowledge is structured and maintained by the judge who would prevent you from the recognition of true knowledge within the world. True knowledge within the world is also not entirely accurate. True knowledge is beyond world and mind. What occurs within perception can only lead you by pointing to truth. It is not truth itself. And I asked, what is truth? Truth is that which you are. Truth is that which you experience when you set aside the filter of the thinking mind. Truth is unbound by any definitions that can be created through word or thought. Truth is that which you are. Truth merely awaits your recognition of it. Truth does not exist in the future. Truth is not bound by your thoughts about time or circumstance. Truth is that which you are. All right. So it looks like I'm out of time. I just want to say that I am looking very closely at exploring, that's not the way to put it, at the continued recognition that these thoughts are not me and I need not engage them. And right now I'm using this, my little balloon, as a reminder to help me do that. And I hope to maybe doubt about it. I'll be exploring this more and more. So we'll be talking about more and more about it in the future. I love you guys, and I'm very, very grateful for each and every day.